Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Seven blocks. Look out. Oh, baby! Daniel Gafford! We heard this block. All leather on that end, then gets out on the break. The windmill.
There's an art in the world of kind of knowing who you are. And he has a great feel for who he is as a player. Again, he adds to our vertical spacing. He adds to our athleticism, our length, our competitiveness. And again, he looks in the eye when you talk to him. He's got a great spirit.
Middays on the Score.
Right, he does. He has that great spirit and soul. You're never going to be a Chicago Bull under Jim Boylan, but Daniel Gafford is. So let's find out more about him. He says he knows himself. Well, we need to get to know him a bit more. So how about his former coach who coached him at Arkansas, Mike Anderson, now the head coach of St. John's, who is on Twitter at @Iron_MikeMA and joins us on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Wonderful.
What do we have here in this kid?
I tell you what, you got, number one, a kid of great character. Mom and dad has done a great job with him. Has a high motor, and you talk about a ceiling. He has an unbelievable ceiling in front of him. You know, he's been playing basketball as long as a lot of other kids have at this stage of his juncture. And but to see where he came from his freshman year, sophomore year, and to where he is right now, you can't teach. He's an elite athlete. You can't teach size. He's a quick. I think he's a quick forward. He can run the floor like a guard. And I think the motor really helps him. And he's one of those kids that's oozing with potential and wants to get better.
Mike, and notice that I believe if I have the numbers right, in his last year at Arkansas, you guys had 9 new players coming in. Gafford was one of the few returners. What role did he play for you in an off the court setting with all those new kids?
Well, he had to become a leader, you know, at a young age, and you know, he went from being one of those guys that fit in. We had a great guard tandem with Daryl Macon and Jalen Barford his freshman year, and so he was able to just do his thing. And obviously, he goes up on the scouting report now the next year, and he's a marked guy, and he put up great numbers. He was first team all conference. I think he was like second in the league and third in scoring. First and rebounding, block shots, and he's an exciting player. And I think, you know, Coach Boyle hit it all when he said, you know, he's going to look in the eye. He's very, very coachable. He's going to do the things you ask him to do. And I think off the floor, he got a chance to grow and become a leader.
Because it's Arkansas, because it's a high-energy front court player, it's easy and maybe too easy to make the Bobby Portis comparison contrast. But I'm going to do it anyway, because that's a guy that Bulls fans are familiar with at this point. How is he like Portis, and how is he not?
I think he's got that motor. You know, I think, you know, I think Bobby's going to be a great mentor for him. Because I thought Bobby was one of those guys, he didn't want to be just a good player, and I'm sure you guys got to taste that. He wanted to be a great player, and he was going to do all the things that it took. He's going to be the first one in the gym, and they told me they used to have to run him out of the gym, and he was the last one to leave. And Bobby's work ethic was second to none, and I think Daniel is starting to grasp that, and I think Bobby is really kind of want to be a guy to help show him the way. But I think they're both exciting players. I think they want to have careers in the NBA, don't want to just be in the league. And I think they're going to do all the things that it takes to put themselves in that position. I think with Daniel, especially now, he get a chance. It's his job now to get better, you know. And, you know, when you're young and you're just coming up and you don't know what kind of talent you do have. But you got school, you got to balance that with, you know, going to class, you got a lot of distractions. Well, now it's his job. And I think, you know, for Bull fans, they're going to see a guy that's going to continue to excel and become an integral part of some of the things they're going to do.
So, Mike, I was kind of like scrolling through some of Daniel Gafford's game logs, and I noticed that in his first start for you at Arkansas, it was against Minnesota. I don't know how well you remember the game, but he went 8 for 8 from the floor and had 7 boards and 6 blocks. Was he just like at a completely different emotional level? What was he like after you named him to the starting five for the first time?
I think I became a smarter coach when I started. You know, I think we ended up winning that game, and he put on a phenomenal show. I mean, you just envision a guy, you know, blocking a shot on one end, and now he's on the receiving end of an alley-oop at the other end. I mean, that's playing with a lot of energy and passion, and I think that's what you're getting with this guy right here. He's very, very efficient. I mean, a lot of those shots were dunks, and of course, when you get to the next level, they ain't going to let you dunk as easy. So I guess you got to either run faster or you got to continue to develop your game. And I think Daniel's one of those guys that he will. I think he's a very coachable young man. And as I said, you flash back when he was, I think, in the 10th grade, 9th, 10th grade. This guy was in the band. And so now you're talking about now he's on the big stage in a Chicago Bulls uniform. And I think, you know, timing is everything. I think his best basketball continues to be in front of him.
The NBA game has changed significantly in the last 5 years. Even you can point to the last 2 years, the way that analytics and multifaceted talents have allowed us to understand what are good shots, what are bad shots, and now everything's being measured. How close in general do you think the college game is catching up, or is there still a gap between watching somebody and doing that scout's job of watching somebody play college ball and understanding how that's going to translate to almost a different sport?
I think, I'll tell you what, it takes a certain individual, and you guys got a guy that's, you know, Dave Bullwinkle. He's come to quite a few of our practices to watch our team and some of the things that we do. And we do a lot of things that hopefully that some of the NBA teams do in terms of workouts and trying how we play. But I just think the versatility, you talk about the analytics, you talk about, guys being multifaceted. I mean, a big guy like Daniel, he's got to learn how to be able to, those guys, they're going to switch at times coming off those screens, those guards. You got to be able to do that kind of stuff. And I think, some of the things that we've done is kind of hopefully got them prepared. But you can't prepare to play against some of the best players in the world because each and every day. So the best way to do that is through the summer league and through training camps. I think that's going to progress a guy like Daniel even more so. But you're seeing more and more young guys have an opportunity to come to that league. I mean, you look at the draft this year, and it's certainly going to have an impact, I'm sure, on the NBA game as these guys continue to come up there. And I think coaches are really trying to push and get these guys ready for that level.
You mentioned Bull Scout Dave Bullwinkle. What exactly was his involvement or exposure in this process?
Well, he came around quite a bit, and of course, I've talked a lot with Dave, and he's watched my teams over the years wherever I've been. And I think one of the things that a lot of teams know our kids they're gonna leave it on the floor. They're gonna play hard. They're gonna play defense. They're gonna play the game the right way. And I think you got to be able to picture some of these guys on down the line. As I said, Daniel was in the band probably six, seven years ago, and now he's on a bigger stage and a guy I think he runs the floor like a guard. He rebounds. Got a great pair of hands. Rebounds the ball, tremendous offensive rebound. You were talking about Bobby Porter. I thought that's what Bobby had that motor, and he thought every shot would miss. Daniel's one of those guys. He's so long. He plays up in the air. He can go get the rebounds, but he just plays relentless, and all he is just getting some seasoning. But Dave, again, I've had a lot of conversation with him in terms of the type of players and development of guys, and I think that's something we do well.
Mike, you're on to a new phase in your coaching career, taking over at St. John's as the head coach back in middle of April, I suppose. How has it been kind of melding into the campus? How has it been meeting with the kids, and what are the expectations for the coming season?
It's been good. You know, I had to come in and re-recruit the kids that were here, and I think we got some good pieces here. And of course, we just got to get it updated in terms of how we want to play. It's going to be a different style, different brand of basketball that these guys played here last year. And Chris did a great job. Mullins did a great job with them. They won 21 games, and I just want to build on that. And then, of course, you know, hopefully continue to bring in talents that fit what we're doing and play a style of basketball that, you know, fans and St. John's alums can appreciate, and continue to develop, you know, good men on and off the floor. And that's one of the things I really want to say about Dan. I think when you talk about a kid, yes, sir, he will look you in the eye. And, you know, when he first came there, now, he didn't look you in the eye. He was a little, you know, how young guys are, they're in a shell. And now I can't stop him from talking now. Yeah. So, but he's in a place right now where I think people can appreciate, you know, a young guy from El Dorado, Arkansas, and it's a big deal for him. It's a big deal for his family, his community back there, and I think he wants to make them proud.
Mike, very good stuff.
Appreciate it.
Best of luck with St. John's, and appreciate you taking the time to join us.
I appreciate you guys having me, and hopefully I'll be down there to see the Bulls play.
Mike Anderson, the head coach of St. John's, former Arkansas head coach, who coached Bulls second-round pick Daniel Gafford.
Multi-positional, number of times that he mentioned that with Daniel Gafford. I don't know what the expectations the Bulls will put on him necessarily are, but nice to know that is a guy that might be able to handle, at least offensively, a position or two, as opposed to just kind of being a little bit more one-dimensional, I suppose.
I think he's going to need to expand his offensive game to
Looks
be anything
like
more than
yeah.
a rim runner, screener kind of guy. But there's, look, the problem is Cristiano Felicio is under contract until the year 4000.
That's not a good thing.
Right.
Well, for him.
Right. It's great for him.
That's great.
And great for his agent and all that. It's wonderful. But the fact that he's still kind of around changes the math a little bit
because he's very around.
He's extremely around, is the case. Yes. We didn't get a lot of chance to react to the great stuff from Stan Bowman. I know that the texters were going crazy with some of that. So it's a lot to have back-to-back interviews there. And, you know, we should also disclose, too, that Jay Zawoski deserves a lot of credit for making sure that our line of questioning stays relevant to the true hockey fans there and on point. There's more than just a little bit of consultation that goes on between the hockey knowledge on this show and how it comes through the vessels that are the hosts of
puppet
the program.
Show is what yes. it is. Yeah, and
right.
by the
that's
way,
that's okay. I think that's in the best interest of the hockey fan.
Jay wouldn't do this himself, probably, but the guy deserves to take a victory lap for all of the things he's reported to you the last like 48 hours, and for nearly all of them coming true within a span of 12. So good on you, Jay Zawoski.
Stop it,
you guys.
Yeah,
right.
Come on.
Oh, please, not me.
No.
So anyway, listen to the podcast and check him out every time he does hockey hits here on The Score, because the man knows his stuff.
And you said there was some stuff from late last night. If you missed it, there was a pretty special Score thing going on. Madden's post was on after the postgame show. Ron Coomer was directing traffic
yep.
with some Cubs folks that were enjoying themselves.
A lot of easy breezy baseball stuff, but there was one piece of conversation. It's Joe Madden and Anthony Rizzo talking about Game 7 of the World Series. I hadn't heard, really, Rizzo's perspective on one thing here, and he let in a little bit more than I think he has before. You know, you get loose with Coom and with Joe, all that kind of stuff. We'll bring it back to you when we come back. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When KB picked up the ball, did you really see it like it's going to be a good throw all the way? Or were you concerned about the slip?
I thought Michael Martinez, because we didn't see him all series. I thought he was a lot faster than that.
Okay.
So I had thought, just don't let the ball get by me, because I thought he was going to be safe.
Yeah.
And then he slips, and I'm just like, oh, God, please don't miss this. I mean, I had pine tar all lined up my glove, but there was no way I was missing that ball. And And once you catch and secure it, it was like...
It's really an amazing feeling,
party
right?
time.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Unbelievable.
Anthony Rizzo talking about the final out of the 2016 World Series Game 7. Pine tar in the glove.
Sure. It's, gets everywhere. You know, there's the pine tar sticks, and there's the spray, and there's all kinds of stuff. Dan.
Was it True Grip? There's another substance
sure.
that the pitchers are using to spin the ball.
No.
That was the whole Trevor Bauer, watch my spin rates for this inning
bit. Dan, no one uses it on purpose. It's just, it's used to adhere your hands to the bat and nowhere else. It's just, it's a very sticky substance that could get anywhere in a baseball clubhouse.
You never
clubhouse
know how it ends up somewhere.
It's all over the place.
And
it's really no
coincidentally,
one's
when the rain starts, just coincidentally, you never know when things get slick out there.
You know, it starts raining, and the clubbies have to run all over the place for the rain gear. And then as you're spreading things around, more things touch the pine tar stick, and then it's just all over the place is what it is. I thought that was, kind of a cute, funny remembrance by Anthony Rizzo there. Fun event last night at Madden's Post with Joe and Ron Coomer, kind of quarterbacking the whole thing, Anthony Rizzo and David Ross. It was a fun little evening of conversation and whatnot. And I'll tell you what, we picked the cut for a couple of reasons. I thought it was funny just to hear Rizzo's expectations of the throw, but also this, like at the very beginning, he mentions right off the top that it was Michael Martinez at the plate. It was Michael Martinez at the plate. Like, as amazing as that series was, as incredible as the T-shirt is, you know, the greatest game ever played was on a Wednesday in Cleveland. You've seen this T-shirt
yes.
that gets worn around all the time. It's a good one.
I don't know if it's the greatest game ever played.
It featured David Ross taking the best reliever in baseball deep, Andrew Miller, and it featured Rajai Davis, a fifth outfielder, taking the other best reliever in baseball, Aroldis Chapman, deep in the same game.
Right.
That's incredible to me.
Okay.
And I don't know how both of those managers end with Aroldis Chapman still pitching or Michael Martinez being used by Terry Francona, of all people, one of the greatest managers in the last 20 years or so. But there you are to end the game with a guy that no one expected to be at the plate hitting off Mike Montgomery, and that's the end of your ballgame. I just, you know, every now and again, little memories pop up from that ball game, from that series, as it were, and just to hear him from Rizzo, I thought just kind of put it in a little bit of a different perspective.
I just hadn't known about the pine tar and the glove. You know, we talked to Bryant shortly thereafter, mm-hmm. and I said, it looked like you slipped. I said, well, I did slip. And what was interesting to me was the smile on his face, that when he picks up the ball as he's throwing, he's smiling. He knows that they're about to win the World Series. And he said, I wasn't worried about it. Riz is a pretty big guy. There's a big catch radius over there. But now finding out after, see, now I'm worried again. Because now
that foot went
right. And every time I see it, now that I know that Rizzo was thinking, oh my God, don't slip. And then he slips. And then he's got to wait to see how the ball leaves his hand. I don't want to relive that. I always had this thing where the year Duke beat UNLV.
Okay.
The Larry Johnson, Stacey Augman team,
yeah,
the year they won that semifinal game. I have rewatched it on grainy VHS tape since then. And
Do you own the grainy VHS tape?
It's got to be somewhere in a box.
Okay.
Yeah, but every time I have watched it, I think they're going to lose.
That's 91?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the greatest basketball games I've ever seen. And one of the most unlikely outcomes, especially after what happened the year before. But then, you know, when that was sort of the de facto national championship before
sure.
the national championship. And every time I've watched it since, I still think they're going to lose. And now that I know that about what happened that last play, and Bryant denied that he was smiling out of happiness. He said it's resting Chris face. That's at least when he was younger. It's not anymore. World weariness has caught up to him.
He's veteran is what he is.
He's a vet. No, he's got some crust on him now, but that used to be sort of childlike resting Chris face.
Smiley Bryant just kind of getting around and bopping around the league, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Cubs have a couple of things coming up in the next day or two. Of course, this today is going to be Adbert Alzolay's first major league start. Wilson Contreras is, I assume, you know, in talking with Kelly Krull in the postgame yesterday and in some of his conversations with reporters after the game, too, in the, you know, general scrum, he was being asked about Adbert and, you know, what the expectations were. Sounded like he had gotten the text already that he was in the lineup and going to be catching this game. I assume that's going to be the case. We haven't seen a lineup out yet, but I figure it's going to be him catching Alzolay instead of Victor Caratini, just based on how Wilson Contreras was talking yesterday. And we've also got Craig Kimbrell's potential last outing for the Iowa Cubs. So by this time, plus a half an hour tomorrow, Jed Hoyer, the general manager of the Cubs, is going to join us at 11 for tomorrow's show. We'll talk with him about what that whole maybe final outing for Craig Kimbrell looked like in Iowa.
And Craig Kimbrell.
And
is
him,
also
too.
Coming.
See, you know, all kinds of different names for that guy.
No,
it's
we've
a tough
said
one.
Craig Kimbrell is an all-time Kimbrell. Difficult name to say. It doesn't, it's sort of stealthily so.
It is.
It doesn't catches look up like it. It's going to be tough, but you got to slow down a little bit because otherwise you're getting to Craig Kimbrell and Craig Kimbrell and Kimbler Craigbull. So Craig Kimbrell.
Kimbrell. Not yep. Kimball either. He killed his wife. No, I don't care. That's the other part of it.
I don't care.
So I would imagine that Kimbrell is, I assume everything goes well, you know, health-wise for him. And he's probably up Thursday and pitching Friday.
Yeah, did you hear some of the sanguine speculation about Brandon Morrow, too? I won't go there. Because I can't. I'm not hardwired to
he's
be hopeful.
He's Jupiter for me, man. Oh. He's Jupiter. I don't.
You got to know what that means.
I don't believe.
You got to be a frequent Bernstein and McKnight listener to understand.
I don't believe Brandon Morrow. Yeah. He's just like Jupiter. Here's the thing about Jupiter. Like, really, that giant, it's all gas, and there's a storm on the face of that planet that's as large as the Earth and has been raging for decades. I don't believe that.
Okay, they can't be true.
I don't believe that at all. So I kind of look at Brandon Morrow the way I look at Jupiter. I don't believe it. I don't think it's going to happen. I certainly can't count on it. That's for damn sure.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. And this segment is brought to you by Patrick Cadillac. And actually, you know, while we are giving Jay Zawoski all the credit for the well-phrased and targeted questions during our Stan Bowman interview, I do have to take you. The final question was me. Final question, I went off script about getting that primer on.
We were all worried.
No, I know you guys are, that's not on the sheet.
What's he doing?
Good job on doing your job. Congratulations.
Good God, man. What are you doing? Jay didn't write that question. But I think that was really helpful. I think for a GM of a team to say, this is what the expectations are now. Because you get used to a Joel Quenneville-coached team. You get used to watching the game and having certain expectations. I'm talking about people, those of us who do make an honest effort to try to see what's going on. And I admit, I don't have a great eye for hockey. It's not as practiced an eye as I may have for watching baseball, football, and basketball. But, you know, you talk to smart people and you ask, well, what am I looking for? How am I watching this? And who better than the guy who runs the team that has installed this coach and has done all this? There you have it. It's a pressure game. Just like a blitzing defense in basketball, just like making sure that it was terrific stuff. I'd love to replay it maybe a little later in the show, maybe another time. But that answer of here's your new Jeremy Colliton coached, remade, remodeled Blackhawks. This is how it's supposed to look when it's going well. And he wants it to be a better half-court team. More greasy goals, more tip-ins, more presence in front of the net. Great fast break team. Want to be a little better when they're running set plays.
It's interesting that you bring up replaying it, because as I over the last break, I went to the head and then I went to the vending machine, ran into Rick, and he's talking about the same thing. I think we can use that as like a primer all season long.
Yes.
Wait, you saw Rick at the vending machine?
I did.
That's crazy.
He was.
Oh, come on.
I know.
Furious. What the hell you say?
Was his cot
still unfolded? About the selection at the vending machine. There were way too many, and I'm with Rick on this. You can't have a vending machine where a whole row is all fruit candies.
What?
I mean, it was Jolly Ranchers and like three different types of Skittles, all good candy in its own right, but the entire row cannot be fruit-based candies. You need a Snickers in there. You've got to have a Twix. You need a Reese's in there. Maybe even those, you know, peanut butter waffle sticks, whatever, nutty bars, that kind of thing. None of that stuff. All of that was empty. I don't know what the hell we're doing with the vending machine.
Too many Flamin' Hot items, too.
Oh, the kids are all about the Flamin' Hot these days.
But I can't have seven Flamin' Hot varietals.
No, I just
mix it up.
Cheetos, fine, and what are the roll-up things? That's all the Takis.
Takis.
Good. I want 10 rows of Cool Ranch Doritos. That's it.
That's what's up.
How big is your vending machine if it has 10 rows?
and where is it?
The dream vending
machine. I call it the junior machine.
Rick leaves. Parenthetically leaves studio, right? Yeah, no, actually, I have been I've always been a Cool Ranch Doritos guy, but very recently, and I don't know why, I've found myself going back to classic nacho cheese Doritos and finding them as satisfying as ever.
Have you had the spicier nacho Dorito?
No.
You got to give that a run.
And the taco flavor is one from my childhood. That was the very first one. That's the one from the mid-70s that we all became enamored with, that they've brought back in the vintage packaging and everything. But I got to tell you, there's something to be said for just the regular classic nacho cheese.
Have you had the Aldi style
Doritos? Brought them in.
You brought them in. They're fantastic.
Yes. Excellent. Super crunchy.
Yep.
That's it. We're going Aldi.
All right. Yep. Let's make a run. So we dropped a couple of programming notes for you over the last few minutes. We're going to have Jed Hoyer Thursday at 11. We'll also hear from Alex Cohen tomorrow about the final, maybe? Kimbrel outing. Cohen, of course, is the Iowa play-by-play man and was a great conversation last week when we were checking in with him about the potential new Cubs closer, well, future Cubs closer. Midday Midway is coming up. We're going to talk about dudes named Lee.
Okay.
And also a check-in on Alice Cooper.
Why, does he need one?
Yeah.
A wellness check? Oh,
yeah.
Don't tell Daniel. It's his guy. It's his buddy.
It's getting weird. It's getting weird with Cooper.
We are going to celebrate a day that I didn't know was now a day today. And we have an update to this. Remember the story yesterday about the wedding ring that was found tied to the tail of the Lake Michigan steelhead? We found out exactly how it got there, who put it there, and when and why.
A solution has been found. The Midday Midway's on the way. Bernstein and McKnight, 670, The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
On the first half of the show, we started out by talking about what we decided. I mean, it was either an ado, a
kerfuffle?
Kerfuffle or a hoo-ha.
Yeah, definitely not an altercation and certainly not a
Donnybrook.
Not a Donnybrook.
Maybe a subset of altercation between Wilson Contreras and Tyler Flowers and subsequently the Cubs and the Braves, and figured out what they were doing and why. We heard Wilson Contreras in his own words describing some of that stuff and listened to the descriptions of it. Then we talked hockey. Stop talking hockey! Talk more hockey! And we did with Stan Bowman, and it was really interesting. And there was a lot of stuff to be in there. If you are a Blackhawks fan, go back. The podcast was just tweeted out by at Bernstein_MCK and by Jay Zawoski.
We asked him about the no movement clauses for Keith and Seabrook, and he came right out and said, we're not doing that. We think we can build around him and move forward.
Actually, he did not answer the direct question of did you approach them to waive their no movement clause. He said, no, we're not interested at the moment in trading either one of them. So technically, he sort of avoided the question, but he made it very clear that he wants their experience around to help out what is largely a younger defensive group. Mike Anderson, the St. John's head coach, who was the Arkansas head coach, had very high praise for new Bull Daniel Gafford. And we also listened back to Anthony Rizzo's memories that he gave us last night on the score of the final out of the World Series, in which finally had pine tar in his glove.
Just a little bit of pine tar.
Right.
So, usually on the midday midway, I bring you factual stories.
Yes.
Sometimes you get a little hoodwinked. Sometimes you got to wear the horns, as it's said.
Ah.
I brought you a story from the Wall Street Journal a few days ago that was, I'm sorry, it was the Washington Post a few days ago. It was a fascinating story, and it was a story that cited a study by the University of Sunshine Coast in Queensland, Australia, about researchers who had found a hook or horn-like feature jutting out from the skull just above the neck that represented the first documentation of a physiological or adaptation due to technology. It was presumed by this university in Australia, which is a real university, and actually did do the study.
Okay.
That because of, you know, looking down at your cell phone, kids were kind of like generating some sort of weird
bone growth at the base of the skull.
At the bet. Yeah, well, apparently it's bunk. Yeah, Snopes, it got Snopes'd.
You blew it!
Yeah, I'm sorry, but a lot of people got duped by it as well. I'm not the only one, and that just makes me part of the crowd, which doesn't make me feel any better. The underlying science, the research behind the study was soft. It just wasn't very good, and apparently there really is no link at all. Not provable between some of the things they found and staring down at your telephone. So, continue to have your head buried in your cell phone.
No, 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 no. Don't give bad advice because there are issues with spinal stenosis that are occurring at younger and younger ages because of this.
Well, but that's just going to be Snopes in a while, too.
No, it's not. Doctors have said this. This is sort of anecdotally, they've noticed that they have seen patients coming in with something that is generally seen in people who are in their 70s, but instead they're in their 50s and it's being exacerbated because of the position of your head.
Definitely don't text and drive. Tell you that much for sure.
And following some stories like this, do you remember the people who were magnet fishing in England and they pulled up the unexploded World War II bomb?
I ended up watching a YouTube video of magnet fishers and got down a whole thing. They're pulling up all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, they pulled up a bomb. They had to call the bomb squad to then explode the bomb safely. And that's why this story caught my eye. A crater 33 feet wide and 13 feet deep.
That's okay.
Appeared in a field in central Germany. Caused by, you guessed it, a World War II bomb exploding in the middle of the night.
Oh, my God.
Police said on Monday that the crater was discovered on Sunday afternoon near Limburg. Is that the home of the eponymous cheese?
Got to imagine.
I would think that Limburger cheese comes from Limburg.
Got to imagine.
Very stinky, but very delicious.
And deadly, apparently.
Well, no, the cheese, this doesn't mean the cheese is deadly.
I think it does.
Okay.
I think we're pretty well proven that.
Okay.
I don't know why you're going around the issue here.
Interesting logical leap there, but I'll take it under advisement. There was no indication it was caused by farm machinery or other tools. Residents reported having heard a loud explosion and feeling a blast in the early hours on Sunday. No one was hurt. The shape of the crater has led explosives clearance experts to confirm it was created by a bomb. Now, here's the final sentence in the AP copy.
Okay.
More than 70 years after the end of the war, unexploded bombs are still found frequently in Germany. Well, great. Is this something you just sort of live with, knowing that anywhere at any time, whether it's in the middle of a cornfield or in a local delicatessen, it's possible that there could be an unexploded bomb underneath your feet?
Yeah, man, this is a thing. You know, Verdun, the big battle, one of the largest battles of World War One. Some parts of that area, those hills, are still cordoned off. That battle took place in 1916, 1917. That's still... Parts of that area are... Yeah, World War One. That's still cordoned off. There's ordnance down there that maybe hasn't exploded yet, and there are places you can't go.
It was a great television series I remember watching as a kid. I think it was a Masterpiece Theater PBS primetime series called Danger UXB. And it was about the first British bomb disposal units.
Oh.
That would deal with the various types of bombs and how they would do it and the
high
science
turnover
behind
rate in that profession,
it.
I would
imagine. Yeah, well, yeah. Lost another one because it was, you know, it was relatively low tech compared to how they do it today.
This from Page Six. This is your wellness check on Alice Cooper. Rock legend Alice Cooper has made a death pact with his wife of 43 years, Cheryl Goddard, insisting we are going to go together. We've made a pact. There is no way of surviving without each other, the 71-year-old rocker told The Mirror. Cooper, the frontman of Johnny Depp's supergroup, The Hollywood Vampires, insisted he has never cheated on his wife since they met in 1975. That's wonderful. And they take the till death do us part very literally and do an extra step. So I ask you for a ruling on a death. I mean, it feels odd, but at the same time, yeah, 40, that's a long time. And Hollywood couples, superhero couples like this, like it's a different animal. You know, it's a different conversation. It's a completely foreign type of relationship. I'm oddly cool with Alice Cooper having a death pact with his wife. I find it kind of, I don't know,
creepy.
Cool? Yeah, but creepy in a way that's like totally acceptable for Alice Cooper to be creepy.
It's on brand for him, is
yeah,
what you're saying.
Yeah, I kind of like it. I'm in. I get it.
School's out forever. Happy Anthony Bourdain Day. This was his, it would have been his birthday on June 25th, and it is now, I guess, somewhat unofficially official to celebrate what is being called Bourdain Day on June 25th. How do you celebrate Anthony Bourdain Day, the life of a really, really great guy who's incredibly missed, a wonderful writer, traveler, television host, chef?
Eat well and live honest, I guess?
Well, here's I'll give you a quote.
Okay.
And if you want to think, yeah, if you want to pay tribute to Anthony Bourdain today, here's your efforts should be directed thusly. Here's a quote. If I'm an advocate for anything, it's to move as far as you can, as much as you can, across the ocean or simply across the river. The extent to which you walk in someone else's shoes or at least eat their food is a plus for everybody. Open your mind, get up off the couch, move. That is great advice. I think a lot of the ills of our world would be solved by more people having the resources and the desire to travel. I think it is a simple way to solve a lot of problems. Is even if you're traveling, the great thing about living in Chicago, one of the wonderful things about this city, and my daughter and I were noting this on a day when I said we went to the Korean grocery store lunch and we went for Indian for dinner, that just going to Western and Devon, if you want to spend an evening, you know, walking up and down Devon and ducking into some of the little restaurants there, go to Chinatown. Go out to the far northwest side and go to a Polish delicatessen. This city allows you to live the Anthony Bourdain vision in so many wonderful ways. Go get authentic ethnic food in authentic ethnic areas. Get Puerto Rican in Humboldt Park. Go get Mexican food in Pilsen. Go to the neighborhoods and ask questions. Get on the web. There are all kinds of clubs and associations and affiliations of people who do this and can advise you about where to go and when to go there. Get West Side Soul Food. Get South Side Soul Food and South Side Barbecue. Go to the places. Be around the people. Eat their food.
Found this story on the Wall Street Journal. Apparently, this is something that's afflicting a good number of high schools, most of them in the South. The Northeast Independent School District in Texas was facing pressure to change the name of Robert E. Lee High School amid national protests over the legacy of the Confederate general. Makes sense, right? But officials were concerned about the estimated $1.3 million it would cost to remove and replace signs, redo a turf field, order new uniforms, and make other changes both large and small. So they decided to rebrand the school Legacy of Educational Excellence and use Lee, L-E-E, High School as its nickname starting last school year. The move, which included keeping the school's gray and red colors, saved about $1 million. So regardless of what you think about the process or like kind of copping out on the Lee thing, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? The idea that like being named after Robert E. Lee is probably not great. Considering...
I speak today to the graduating class of Carlos Lee High School.
See, that's the next spot. So for all you other Lee High Schools, what Lees would you rather have? I nominate Stan Lee, the famed co-creator of Marvel Comics.
It's Leibowitz.
Yeah, but once when
Stanley
you
from The Office?
Stanley from The Office.
You have to be
Stan Lee.
No, you have to actually be named Lee.
Have to. It's
he's
Stan
Leibowitz.
Lee.
No, but it's
Christopher Lee, the famed actor.
Oh my God!
Former Dracula,
badass.
Taker. He's Saruman, and he's also in is Count Dooku in the Star Wars movies. Like, wow, how could you not love that guy? He's all over the place.
So the Star Wars movies had both Peter Cushing as Grand Moff Tarkin.
That's right.
Not Grand Moff Tarkin.
No, that's a different.
Stay away from him.
It's a Friday sext. But that is.
I didn't know both the Hammer films stalwarts.
Well, and Christopher Lee deserves to have a lot of things named. You know, Christopher Lee was in, it's the OSS, the British Secret Service. In World War II, he was an actual, literal Nazi hunter. He hunted and killed Nazis. The story behind Christopher Lee, when he's on set of Lord of the Rings, there's this scene where Peter Jackson, the director, is instructing this one, the scene where somebody gets stabbed in the back, right? And Peter Jackson is talking to this actor and says, all right, just make a sound like this when you get stabbed. And he makes whatever sound he makes.
Right.
Christopher Lee, who's on set, walks up to the director, Peter Jackson, and goes, that's not the sound a man makes when he's stabbed in the back.
Ooh.
How hardcore is that? How hard?
Yeah.
I mean, that man lived so many lives.
I'm throwing my vote in for Tommy Lee, by the way.
Tommy Lee, is that his actual name?
No, probably
no, that's
not.
That's
probably.
Not Leibowitz,
no
I don't
way.
Think.
If you go to Sean Lee High School, you're immediately hurt.
There's nominating Bruce Lee. 224, no, Geddy Lee doesn't count because that's his middle. His actual name is Gary Lee Weinrib.
That's right.
Tommy Lee, by the way, Tommy Lee Bass.
Oh, really?
Or bass.
Oh, bass.
Which would be ironic. Would that be ironic, Dan?
Coincidental.
Does he play he's the drummer, though, right?
Right.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's ironic or interesting, for that matter.
We can honk a boat horn with his dong, so that's cool.
Feel free.
At Spike Lee High School, you just yell at pictures of Reggie Miller all day.
Spike Lee's good. Yeah, because Geddy Lee is named Geddy Lee because Gary, by his old Yiddish-speaking uncle, would refer to him as Geddy. That's how he pronounced Gary. So his friends made fun of him and thought his name was Geddy. Geddy Lee, Geddy Lee. And they said, okay, that'll be his name instead of Gary Weinrib.
I like the idea that at Tommy Lee High School, whenever the hockey team scores, the boat horn goes off.
He's just up in a balcony. Right. Don't
look up Tommy, we got a hockey game tonight, buddy. You got to work.
Are you sure? All right, very quickly, we have our reasoning for why the wedding ring was found tied to the tail of the steelhead that was just caught on Friday. It was right. It was a platinum wedding band that was found zip tied to the tail of this nice fish. It's a good looking trout. So apparently, this was a ring that was lost. Or no, excuse me, ring that was placed there. Captain Jason Rose, who is a fishing guide, released a steelhead with his wedding ring on it May 4th, in Michigan. And it was recaught on the other side of the lake. He said, I didn't want any issues with my ex. She finds the story somewhat amusing, and none of us can believe somebody caught it. But as a cathartic move after his divorce, he tied his wedding band to a steelhead, released it near the port of Whitehall, Michigan. Steelhead re-caught on Friday on the Gray Lion 2 in 105 feet of water. And he said, lost love. I was married for the better part of a decade. My ex-wife and I decided to go our separate ways. She was always against me following my dreams as a fishing guide. She hated how much I fished.
Oh, that sucks.
So because she hated how much he fished, he's like, here you go. I'm going to put a wedding ring on a fish. He said, 4 years went by since our divorce. I needed to get rid of that ring. I didn't want to just toss it to the bottom or pawn it. I release it the best way I know how. I'm convinced that ring is cursed, he concluded. My life has been nothing less than great since I released it. So now that the cursed ring has come back.
No!
Right?
Oh, right? It's back.
It's like the monkey's paw.
He's got to go find the ring and set it on another fish.
Right. Or what is it? How do you do it? Another Lord of the Rings reference here. You got to melt it down in the fires of what?
Fires of Mount Doom, I think, is where you have to mount that down.
Oh, well, good luck to him. I hope the curse hasn't returned. And that is the Midway coming up next. Baseball talk with one of the smartest guys in the business. We moved him around on what is Joe Day for us. Joe Sheehan is straight ahead on The Score.
we really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.